Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual with our Sunday morning show. And delighted to have as our guest today at Northwest Federal an old friend of mine and one of the major's outstanding managers, Sparky Anderson of the Cincinnati Reds. A great ball club, an exciting ball club. They've been pretty well riddled with injuries, but they've been able to hang in there, and they're still very much in the race. Remember, today, Sunday, you can go out and see the final game of this series, and I believe it's the final appearance this year of Cincinnati at Chicago. The White Sox will be on the road. They're playing at Cleveland in the final game, and then they come home, and the Cubs go on the road. So try to get out and see a ball game as often as you can. It is still the greatest game in the world. We'll be talking with our guest, Sparky Anderson, in just a moment. We're delighted to have Sparky Anderson, the fine manager of the Cincinnati Reds, as our guest on our program today. Cincinnati is an exciting ball club to look at. They play exciting baseball. They look like athletes, and I think that our guest has something to do with that. You know, Sparky, after spending some 40 years in baseball myself, I always kind of resented it when I'd see a ball player come up to the plate with a long beard and a mustache. He didn't look like an athlete to me. Now, you don't have that problem on Cincinnati.
No, we don't have that, Bob. I think that what we have over in Cincinnati is a little bit respect for the rest of people in the country. You know, I do think that baseball, or sports in general, have control over this country. I think what they do is more important than what the President of the United States really says. Because I think the kids do nothing today but watch television, and they watch every sporting event that's on. So I really feel that as an athlete, when you were a young kid, you had a dream to be in the major leagues. You had a dream to be a star, what they call, and be in show business. So here you are with the opportunity to do it. You owe the kids the right to look at somebody that is appreciative of the fact that they have been good enough and lucky enough to be in the major leagues and yet still have respect for the rest of the country.
Well, now, do you have a set of rules on this sort of thing?
What we do, Bob, is I just have always told them I'd appreciate if they don't wear any mustaches or beards or extra long hair. I know today they wear their hair a little fuller, no problem with that, but just to keep it neat, and I appreciate if you don't wear a mustache or beards, and everybody has always stayed with that. Of course, I've been lucky. I've had Bench and Rose and Morgan on our ball club, and then along came Foster and Griffey and Conception. And those kids, and they've all been kind of leaders in their own rights. David's kind of always helped with the Latin kids. And of course, Pete and John. Pete was the first one there, and he looked after John when John came, and then John looked after the other young kids as they've come along.
You know, the first three you mentioned, how are you ever going to replace the kind of attitude that these guys have had, as well as their ability? But it is attitude that brings out great ability.
Yeah, we won't ever replace it in the history of Cincinnati, in my opinion. I think that when it's all said and done, Bench will be rated the all-time catcher in Cincinnati history. Rose will be, you know, their all-time ball player in history. Morgan will be their all-time second baseman. Conception, their all-time shortstop. So if we cannot ever replace that, what we have to do is to try to come up with somebody that can play in the major leagues and do an adequate job up here. And we've just been very fortunate, and I know I have, because someday, when I get a little older, I look old now, Bob, but when I really get old, I'll have the really great, I think, thing that'll happen to me is I'll get to go when they're inducted in the Hall of Fame. And I think that'll probably be the biggest thrill when I go, when Pete's inducted, when John's inducted. I believe Morgan's going to be inducted in the Hall of Fame.
Well, he deserves it. He's really a marvelous ball player. He's always been one of my favorites. Well, Cincinnati, the Dodgers and the Giants are in a three-prong race. Looks like it's going to go right down to the wire.
It should go to the wire. Los Angeles right now, I think, starting to show their strength a little. They've been healthy basically all year, and they kind of struggled around. I think they won the year before, and I think today, every time a club wins, I think they get a little fat with money, and the next year they think they can just walk out there and win. I think the Dodgers felt that way, and they woke up and found out, hey, wait a minute, the Giants look like they're going to run away with this thing, and Cincinnati's hanging right in there, and all of a sudden the Dodgers decided to start going, and they put it together now, and I think that both San Francisco and us are going to have to be able to play extremely good baseball, at least 650 if we expect to stay with them.
Sparky, I wonder if you realize that there are 11 managers in the major leagues, including yourself, who came out of the Dodger organization. 11 managers today. That's almost half of the managers in the big leagues came out of the Dodger organization.
No question. And I give that credit to Branch Rickey. When Branch was running the Dodgers, and of course he left there in 1953 and moved on to Pittsburgh, but I think the Dodger organization, everything that's ever happened to them, has come from Rickey. I believe that Rickey, in my opinion, is the greatest one man that ever entered baseball, and that includes Babe Ruth, Casey Stengel. Stengel to me is number two, and Babe was number three, but I believe that Branch Rickey did more for this game than any other man that's ever stepped into it.
Well, that's a nice thing to say about him. I remember him well. Just think, you have three former Dodgers, have the three best clubs in the National League. Lasorda with the Dodgers, Ozark with the Phillies, and you with the Reds. All out of the Dodger organization, you have the best clubs in the National League.
And we all played together. I played with Danny in 1955 at Fort Worth. And on that ball club, we had Ozark. We also had Dick Gray, you remember. We had Maury Wills. We had Carol Berenger, who's a coach. We had Dick Williams, who's managing in Montreal. I didn't know we had that many at that time. We ended up fourth place. I guess we had guys that couldn't play but were real smart. I don't know.
Well, all this started for you in South Dakota. You're not a big city boy. What do you recall back in those days in South Dakota when you were growing up?
I can recall very vividly the lilac bushes we used to have in the front yard, because I used to love when spring come and they came. And I remember the crab apples, because I got shot at buckshot, you know, stealing a guy's crab apple. But really, we had open fields to run in, and we only had 632 people in my town. I had seen no foreigners of any kind except Germans and Russians. They called them the Russians. They're all farmers there from Russian ancestry, and that's basically what I grew up around, is German people and Swedes. And then I came to California, and I was kind of shocked. I'd never seen all these different types of people. And really, I think it was great for me. I lived in Los Angeles, and I lived in what is known today as Watts, where they used to have the Watts riots, and they had that was a big thing. But I was raised around the poor people, and I like to think that no man can ever realize what success is unless he's been poor. And I tell people, and I know people that are wealthy get upset about that, but I said no wealthy man in his lifetime has ever lived, because until he's been poor, he don't know what it is to be successful.
Well, that's certainly true. You know, your Cincinnati ball club, you've been able to avoid the reserve clause pretty well, haven't you? I mean, the big name guys.
Yeah, we've been able to keep our players, and I like to think that possibly it's maybe some of the agents that our ball players have been a little more respected to the fact that ball players should remain with their club. I believe that a ball player has a right to bargain for money, but I don't think a ball player has a right to sell himself as cattle, and I don't think he has a right to sell down people who had spent a lot of time and worked very hard with him.
Sparky, in your opinion, you've devoted your life to baseball. What's going to bring sanity back into the game in this regard?
I think when ownership is not afraid that the fans are going to walk away from them because they lose a ball player. I think the biggest mistake we make is that we think winning's the only thing. I don't think so. I think in Chicago they proved this. They haven't won in 33 years, but yet the Chicago fans have always shown up for the Cub games. They have always backed the Cubbies. And I don't believe at any time the fans care that much about winning. I think what they want to do is go out and see good baseball. And I don't think they expect ownership to sell their soul and sell down everything just to have a good player.
You brought up an interesting point when we were driving out here to Northwest Federal about when I asked you whether you'd like to see the designated hitter in the National League, and you brought up a point that I think has a lot of merit. It takes something away from the manager, and you were mentioning the fact of what one-run games mean to a ball club.
Well, one-run games to me are what is going to determine. Earl Weaver, for instance, right now is 30-17 in one-run games, and Baltimore's not even in first place. So just think, if you didn't have Earl Weaver managing over there and his club wasn't 30-17, say they were 17-30, look where Baltimore would be. In my opinion, if I was an owner and I had to hire one man, I'll go back over his whole career, and it's shocking if you look at it, it's about 10 or 12 years in the minor leagues and then look at his 11, 12 years in the major league record. Hands down to me, Earl Weaver is probably as fine a man as ever walked on a baseball field from a managerial standpoint.
I agree, and he was sitting just where you're sitting just a couple of weeks ago. You saw by our book.
I always have a lot of fun with him. I call him the little man, and he's tough. You know, people think he's really tough and mean, but when you're with him privately and with him on a social level, he's a tremendous guy.
Marvelous little guy. Tell me, what is a manager supposed to do? Now, I've heard people say that you and Weaver are the best managers in the major leagues. Your record speaks for itself. You won the pennant with the Reds in your first year in 1970. You won the World's title. You won the pennant again in 1972. You won the pennant again in 1975. Is a manager supposed to have his players like him? Does it make that much difference in the running of a ball club, whether they like you or not?
We all like to be liked. You know, I don't know if anybody don't like to be liked, but I think if your players really like you, you're in trouble. Because, it's honest. I think if you put them under a lie detector test, you'd find out they hate you. But they put up a good false front in front of you, and I think when they're interviewed by people, they talk about how nice the manager is. But just like Earl Weaver, him and Palmer have fought for years, and yet they have great respect for each other. Earl knows what a great pitcher Palmer is, and Palmer knows what a great manager Earl is. But if you like each other, when I go take a pitcher out, for instance, Bob, how can he like me? You know, I took Freddie Norman out yesterday. I'm sure today Freddie Norman liked to kill me. If you pinch hit for a guy, he can't like you. I say 2 weeks after the season starts, a young manager coming to the big leagues might as well realize one thing. He's now hated by everybody except the guys he plays every day.
Well, that's pretty true. Well, this race, I tell you, baseball this year, I think, is going to have their greatest year attendance-wise in history. There are some notable reasons for it. One, the resurgence of the Giants, which is certainly good for baseball, and Milwaukee coming back the way they have. And, of course, you people will get up pretty close to 3 million.
Yeah, we'll do between 2.7 and 2.8. Just depends how close we stay going. In September, Dodgers will break the record this year. They'll probably go around 3.2, and the Giants about 1.8, which is tremendous. Milwaukee, great job Bamberger's done over there. And, of course, they've done a lot of things to their ball club, and they've really helped baseball. Detroit coming back again this year. I think Ralph Houck's proving that, you know, there's still a place for that old touch and the old past. And Ralph is managing both eras. He managed in the era when you could scream at players, and now he's managing the era where you have to talk very quiet to them or they'll leave. So Ralph's another guy that's proved that, you know, that's what managing's all about. He was able to change. But all the clubs are drawing well in California. I'm so happy for Mr. Autry. It'd be a great thing for baseball if they can win it out there.
I'd love to see him win it. You know, he's different from Steinbrenner and Corbett and some of these other guys, the fellow down in Texas. Autry's got a lot of money, and he spends it for players, and he's dying to have a winner, but he stays out of the operation. He doesn't tell a You know, Charlie Finley used to call from up in the booth and talk to the man. Well, you know Charlie as well as everybody.
Yeah, Charlie's smart like a fox, though. You know, everybody said, oh, Charlie Finley. Well, Charlie Finley knows what's going on. He didn't go to school to eat his lunch or pick his nose. He knows just what's happening all the time. But really, you're right about Autry. Gene is a man that loves the players. There isn't anything he wouldn't give a ball player, and I think really that's the reason that these guys that he did get free agents, I think they finally realized, hey, wait a minute, this guy's willing to pay out his money. We got to be willing to walk that extra mile for him because he is really cares what happens to him, and he's willing to do anything for the player.
In your opinion, what has Walter O'Malley contributed on the scene?
Oh, he's the master. He's been able to show people what it means to merchandise your product. If you go into his stadium, his stadium's, what, 20-some years old now, 20 years old now. It's just like the first day it opened. His bathrooms, his clubhouses, his walkways, everything are just immaculate. Dodger Stadium is the same today as when it opened. And the man knows how to merchandise. He knows what it is to draw people. He knows what it is to be first class. And I would say, really, O'Malley is the man of the hour right now in the game.
Yes, he's really done a tremendous job. Our guest this morning, and we're delighted to have him, is one of the Major League's outstanding managers, Sparky Anderson of the Cincinnati Reds. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. I'm delighted to have an old friend as our guest today, Sparky Anderson, the manager of the Cincinnati Reds. Sparky, when it comes to managing, and you've been a success at it, and you've got a great record, what the business of managing, can a man come into the major leagues and manage? Can a ball player who's in the major leagues, is it unfair to name him a manager of a ball club? Does he need a minor league managing background?
I don't think so. I know a lot of people do. Fregosi, for instance, over California right now, I think he's proving that you don't need the minor league background if you have a personality for that ball club. And I try to tell young managers, they say, well, what do you have to do? I say, wait a minute. If you have to find out what you have to do, then you forget it. You should be able to walk in that room and just be you, and your touch should be able to touch those guys so that you can get them to play for you. And I think anybody that has that touch can walk in and manage right off of the college, high school, I don't care what it is, if you have a touch with your players and can see a picture. Best way I can explain it is when you look out on the field, you should be able to shut the scoreboard off, and you should see a picture of what's happening out there and whether you're ahead or behind, what has to be done. And then the rest of it all is around the players. You have got to be able to have a guy to play for you. He don't have to like you, but he's got to be able to play for you.
What do you recall about a wonderful man, a fine manager, and a good friend of yours and mine, the former manager of the Dodgers?
Oh, Alston, he's the greatest of our time as far as I'm concerned. And I don't say that on the field. That's where I say managing on the field is 25%. Off the field is 75% of it. In other words, on the planes, in the hotels, in the clubhouse, how he conducted himself. He had, look at his coaches. He had such guys as Charlie Dressen. He had Bobby Bregan. He had Leo DeRocher. Nobody ever disturbed him. They did a lot of talk, those guys. It didn't bother Walter. Walter told me one time, I asked him, I said, Walter, how do you put up with certain things? He said, remember this and never forget it. Little things, don't worry about. The major things, you hop onto. And he always kept total control. At no time did they ever have to worry that ball club was going to get out of his hands. He had some great stars over there, Wills. He had Drysdale, Koufax. And I asked Sandy one day, why is this man so successful? He says, because he lets the players have all the credit. He stays in the background, and he just goes year after year after year. He, to me, was the master of what managing was. He came from a little town, Dartown, Ohio, and never changed after 23 years. You walk up to him, he was the same farm guy you knew 23 years before. He never went to his head, never became a big shot.
Sparky, I know you've heard people say, and I've heard it a number of times, that some managers have a tendency to overmanage.
Well, I think by overmanaging, they're trying to be too tricky with the other manager. They want to try to bury the other manager. You're not going to bury that other guy. He knows his ball club. He knows exactly what his club can do. And some guys want to try to embarrass him. They think that's a big challenge if they can embarrass the other manager. I, myself, don't care for that. I just like to go out and win, and I'm not out there to manage against that other man. I'm going to try to know what his club can do and everything, but I'm not there to try to show him up. I'm not there to show nobody up. I, myself, personally, I do not believe that baseball was made for me personally and not made for me to be a celebrity. Baseball was made for everybody.
Yes. Everybody loves it. Would you like to see interleague play? Would you like to have the Yankees come into Cincinnati?
No, I wouldn't, because I think it steals from what the greatest event in the world is, the World Series. And I don't think anything's ever greater. I have been in four of them, and each one becomes bigger and bigger to me, because I know that when I was in the last one in 76, I might not ever be back again. And that's an empty feeling, because that is the greatest show on earth, the World Series.
Well, you played, your team played, and I think the most exciting World Series I've ever seen. You know what I'm talking about, with the Boston Red Sox.
Never be another one. I'll never forget the sixth game. And I thought I stunk up the joint that night, and we lost that ball game, and we're walking up the runway to the bus, and Rose come up and tapped me. He said, hey, don't worry about a thing. He said, we just played in the greatest game that ever was in a World Series. He said, what a thrill. He said, tomorrow we'll just come out and beat them and end it all.
Remember that? A couple of those catches in that series were unbelievable.
Some great catch. Lynn made a great, great catch, and Evans made a catch that I still couldn't believe. Yastrzemski made a couple great catches in left field. They really have a good ball club, Bob, and they're better now than when we played them in 75. I just don't see how anybody's going to be able to control Boston this year unless a club can get good pitching against them, and I just don't know how you're going to get good pitching against them.
You know, you were talking before about your age. You're comparatively a young man to be. People think, you talk about Sparky Anderson, people think, well, he's been around 20 or 25 years. Actually, you haven't been around that long, a comparatively short time.
You know, I told somebody the other day I was 44 years old. He said, you must have been 12 when you were born. So, you know, I look old, and I think it's from being in the minor league so long, Bob, riding those buses. I told Kozlowski, I said, you guys got to eat steaks all the time. I said, we were eating hamburgers and lucky to get it. But really, people do. They see the white hair, and they say automatically you're old. I'm 44, and I'll be honest, I feel younger now than I felt 5 years ago. I don't know. Maybe it's because I do have a little money in the bank. Maybe I feel happier about it, more secure. I don't know what it is, Bob, but I really feel great.
You know, as well as most baseball fans know, the big difference in the game over the last 50 years today is the accent on relief pitching. Now, we saw a kid pitch for you yesterday, Hume, that looks like he's really got the making. It looks like he belongs out in the bullpen. Cubs have perhaps the greatest relief pitcher in baseball. You were saying some nice things about him coming out here.
You know, I'd never seen the great Joe Page because he was a great one, and there's been some great ones I know in the past. I can't believe there's ever been one greater than Suter. I always wondered when we played against him, I said, why did my guy swing at that ball in the dirt? I said, make him get it up. So I watched the All-Star game, and he come in, and Brett was the first hitter, and he threw one and started above his knees, and Brett swung at it and was in the ground. I said, oh, I know now. I said, that ball looks like it's a strike, and by the time they swing it, it's in the ground. He is the greatest relief pitcher I have ever seen in my lifetime. I like to think the kid I got there is about as good as anybody in the league right now, but I'm not going to try to kid anybody. Suter is by far, he's almost untouchable.
He really has remarkable stuff, and the big thing about Suter is his consistency.
Yeah, he's just every ball game, and I know Herman. I look over and watch Herman. I say, oh, Lordy, let's please be ahead up to seven, because if we're not, he's going to smile at you and reach down the bullpen and bring in Suter and just kind of stick his nose out at you, because really the guy is, and he's done a phenomenal job, and these people here are very fortunate to get to go to a ballpark and see somebody that might, if he don't hurt his arm, I think in due time go down maybe as the greatest relief pitcher of all time.
Who was the greatest hitter you ever saw?
Greatest hitter I ever seen. I didn't get to see him hardly, only just a very few times. But I talked to all the old-timers. I talked to the modern guys. And they tell me, without a doubt, the greatest hitter of all times is Ted Williams. And I have to believe it. After I was with Ted last year for about 2 hours in his room and talking to him, and I know why. I mean, the man knows everything, what he was doing, why he was doing it. Nobody was ever fooling him. And he's not only a great hitter, he's a great man.
He is a great man, and I'm happy to say one of my closest friends. Parker, do you realize that had Williams been able to forget the overshift and bunt or hit a little bit down the third baseline, he'd have probably hit 500.
But he could have hit anything I think he would have wanted to hit if he wanted to go against it. Plus, if you'd have put him in a ballpark like New York or Detroit or the old St. Louis ballpark, and I take nothing away from Musial. Musial was a great, great hitter. But if you put Williams in that little bandbox in right field, there would have been no way to pitch to him. I think he would have walked more times than any hitter that's ever lived. I don't think you could have allowed the man to swing in those ballparks.
That's true. I often think that he played in Tiger Stadium for a couple of years, they'd have forgotten about Roger Maris.
Oh, yeah. That wouldn't have been, there'd have been no chance. Like I say, the only thing against something like that, he'd have got over one of those ballparks. In Boston, it's 900 feet to right field. They weren't afraid there to pitch to him. But if you'd have got him in Detroit, I think it'd just been automatically four and go to first.
If the National League did have the designated hitter rule today, it would be kind of an advantage for you because you're pretty well crippled up and you've been hurt for a long time. Do you have what you would call the ideal designated hitter on your club?
Well, I think we got about three that we could would really help us. But I don't want it. But I think we could take Rose, Bench, and Morgan and just rotate them. I think each day we could play one of them and rest one of them, rest two. And by just rotating those three guys, we would get a chance, you know, no question, to have a great hitter in the lineup, plus being able to give him a little breather.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is one of the outstanding managers in baseball, Sparky Anderson of the Cincinnati Reds. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Try to get out to Wrigley Field today and see the final game of the season between the Cubs and Cincinnati Reds at Chicago. And they'll probably pack the place again today. They've been really, well, Cincinnati is a club that really draws people. This team really looks like they love to play. You know, you and I were speaking about managers. We've known them all. And I know you love Casey Stengel like I did. I used to love to talk with that guy. And you know what you have to be very careful with? Now, if I had a 15-minute show, and I didn't ask him a first question where the answer had to be yes or no, he'd talk about the bank out in Burbank and his banking and his business, and I'd never get another question.
No chance, Bob. I have in my home right now 5 pictures with Casey that I have them in a thing in my den. You couldn't give me enough money, and I mean that, for those pictures. He is the greatest one man, other than Ricky, to me, that ever passed through our game, because he would stand on the corner with the paper guy. He would visit with the wino walking down the street. It did not matter. You could be with Casey, and Casey loved to drink. And if you were with him, and you sat with him at 5 o'clock in the morning, you'd get tired and leave. If you came back at 8, it was like you never left. He's just still talking. You just joined in the same sentence. It didn't matter.
Yeah, he was really a remarkable man. Baseball is fortunate that the fact that he was a great part of it.
He was, and the game will never see another one. And that's why I say I think the old-timers were what the game was about. I think today they're much stronger, the players. I think they're a little better. But I do think we lack one thing. We lack that genuine playing because we loved it the way they did in the old days.
Well, if you look at the Cincinnati Ball Club, they look like they have it. They come to play.
They like to play, Bob, and they're good people. And I just hope we can always remain that way as long as I stay there because I can't stand to be around bad people.
Sparky, thanks very, very much for being our guest. You've been a great credit to baseball. I wish you good health and lots of happiness and all the good luck in the world of the Cincinnati Reds.
Well, I appreciate it, Bob, and I enjoyed being on your show again.
Sparky Anderson, one of the great managers in baseball. We've enjoyed having him as a guest today. Try to get out and see his ball club against our Cubs today at Wrigley Field. Should be some kind of a ball game. They're both out to try to win the pennant in their division, so it's a very, very important game. Anyway, have a happy Sunday. And next Sunday, we'll talk about the coming heavyweight fight with Ben Bentley, who's a real expert in the fight game, so don't miss it. Bob Elson saying goodbye now until next Sunday at our usual time.